Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by our friends over at TrueCar. You know, it can be difficult while you're trying to figure out what are the 13 archetypes of any given season of Survivor. It can also be difficult to find clarity when you're trying to find the best price for a brand new car. You could end up paying thousands more than your neighbor just for the same car. So how do you really know what's fair? Well, you go on to do your research, and there's only one place to get the most comprehensive car pricing information available. And the truth is, the car prices can vary greatly just within your area. So when you know what car you want and you're ready to buy, there's only one place to go. You know, it's TrueCar and TrueCar app, because there's no hassles, there's no headaches, just the car that you want at a price that you feel good about. People have saved an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. It's how car buying was always meant to be. Over 2 million cars have been sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and there's over 10,000 dealers in the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So don't let these other car pricing websites treat you like you're fresh meat. Go and work directly with one of the TrueCar certified dealers when you visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app and start saving. TrueCar, never overpay. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back here with one of the traditional podcasts that we do every season that all of a sudden this medevac in this episode 4 really threw us for a loop, because we ended up losing two people this past week, getting us down to that magic number of 13. And as longtime listeners know, when we get down to 13, it's time to bring in this man, the great friend of Rob as a Podcast. Of course, also, you can see him on ESPN.com and read his books. Yes, It's Hot in Here and How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, and much, much more. The great AJ Mass. AJ.
Hello, Rob. How are you? Yes, good to see you again.
Doing very good. Happy to have you back. How's everything in your world?
Good. I mean, it's about a week sooner than I expected, but, you know, no sweat. Literally, no sweat. I'm about to pass out. No sweat. It's
Yeah.
I quickly dug around my research here and kept digging and digging and digging, and hopefully I've been able to find the answers to the questions you'll be asking me today.
Good. Well, AJ, I appreciate you coming on with us, because I know this is one of your busiest times of the year, that the fantasy baseball season is in high gear. I know you're getting set with that. I know you're also podcasting about the 100 on your podcast, The Dropship, as well.
Yes, The Dropship, The 100 podcast. We are luckily in the middle of a two-week mini-season hiatus here to recharge our batteries, but Joe Garfine and I are excited to be talking about the CW show that is pretty much a nice little allegory for the political goings-on in real-world America today.
Oh.
It sounds like a sci-fi show, but it's quite prescient in its Trumpitude, I will say.
Okay, wow. I didn't know that it was an allegory. I'm going to check it out now. I like allegories.
Yeah, unintentional, perhaps, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, AJ, of course, is going to talk about his 13 archetypes that he first outlined in his book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, and we'll get into all that. And then, as we've done every season, I believe going back to the original Brains versus Beauty versus Brawn now, we're going to do our fantasy draft that we do. So it's sort of a mid-season fantasy draft, but this is actually the earliest we've ever done it. We've never done it pre-swap. So really, we are going to try to do a new exercise today of take people based on where their positions are at the end of this first iteration of the game, and then try to project that out, who's in the best position to win. So that'll be a interesting draft today, AJ, as well.
Well, I think I need to change something up, because last season didn't go my way.
Yes. Well, it was close last season. That was a down to the wire, right?
Yeah, well, you had Jeremy and I had Spencer, and I basically just needed him to get two votes, I think. Well, that didn't happen, so.
Right. And the way our draft works is that we put a lot of stock into people who get votes at the end. I think you get like 2 points for a vote at the final tribal council. I'm sorry, each vote received at the final tribal council, I believe we get 3 points for that. So that's huge. So that was a major, major, you know, triple word score for Jeremy Collins for me.
Yeah, the expanded jury and getting all of the votes.
Yeah, that's 30 points right there.
Swung the pendulum there. Yeah, yeah. A dirty 30, if you will.
Right. Because we only award 3 points for making the final tribal council, but then getting all the votes turned into a 33-point play for Jeremy there at the end. So really good stuff. And we'll talk about that when we get to discussing our draft later on. But first, the task at hand is going to be determining the archetypes that AJ has laid out in How Fantasy Sports Explains the World. And AJ, I was on Survivor Reddit this past week. I saw people were already making their lists of trying to predict what you're going to do. This has basically turned into like a March Madness brackets.
Yeah, everyone sits around and waits for Greg Gumbel to reveal all the archetypes. And then we wait another half hour and then another half hour and they still haven't revealed the brackets. And what the heck are you waiting for, CBS? This is not the Oscars. Just tell us who's playing. Oh, it was a fiasco yesterday, I'm telling you.
And so in offices around the country, people have made their pools and everybody threw in their list of what the archetypes are going to be. And now here we are, Selection Monday. AJ is going to reveal what his actual archetypes are.
And just like the real thing, you're going to get a whole bunch of people upset with me, a.k.a. the committee, because their team did not get in the right ranking and seed order. So, yeah, it's going to be exactly the same thing. I'm sure of it.
Okay. So just to set this up, if you're playing along at home, if you want to pause it, let me go ahead and tell you what these archetypes are. And then AJ will fill in the survivor that he thinks best represents this archetype for each slot. So these 13 are in the order. Can I give it the order away, AJ? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. The order of the archetypes, as AJ feels, are in the order that are most likely to win. We have the fresh meat. That's like the person who doesn't know what they're doing. There is the ninja, the person that you barely know is on the show. And AJ, tell me if I'm getting any of these wrong.
Sure.
The cheerleader. And, you know, sometimes people are better being cheerleaders and other times they're better in other roles on the tribe, as we've learned.
Yes, like being an all-star caliber NBA players. That's a much different role than the cheerleader. Completely different thing.
There is the loose cannon, the person who is really just unpredictable and out there. There's the narcissist, the player that is most obviously narcissistic in the group. There's the old reliable person, the person that you can count on. There is the marriage of convenience, which is two-part, the two people that you always end up seeing together. There's an idiot savant, the person who is like doing crazy stuff. You don't know how it's working, but it is. Captain Loophole, the person who has all of the angles figured out and is always like trying to look, you know, bend the rules to make it work for them. The X Factor, the one person who's different from everybody else. There's the mad scientist. AJ, how would you explain the mad scientist?
The mad scientist is the person who has all the crazy plans, cannot be content to let the status quo go. You know, you're Tony Vlachos, the one who's going to always like, yeah, I know I got a plan here, but I got to do this because this is what I need to do right now in order to get ahead. You know, they're going to throw their plans out the window and start from scratch at any given moment. It's different from the idiot savant who is making plans that you at home are watching and just goes, there is no way this is going to work. And somehow it does, despite all logic to the contrary. So it's the difference between someone who's kind of plotting and getting lucky versus someone who's plotting because they can't help but plot.
Then there is the other part of the marriage of convenience, and then also the diplomat, which, as the name states, is the diplomatic contestant who's always looking to broker that next treaty, which is going to help them advance in the game. All right. So, AJ, we had all of our archetypes from last season. Any changes that you ever have thought about making from the list from season to season? I know when I talked to Angie, she makes some adjustments in between seasons on her formulas. Does anything ever happen on a season that makes you say, okay, well, maybe I should be tweaking this a little bit, or the list is the list?
The list is the list, primarily because we are dealing with such a small sample size that I don't think that anybody, it's not like we've had a run of ninjas win or something like that. If that were the case, I'd perhaps like to rethink it. Even though I know this is the new Survivor with voting blocks, still, this is the basic order of these people. You could have a really bad diplomat, and the reason that the diplomat doesn't win every season is because you know, each season is different, and people who are in these roles are going to be better or worse at these roles than perhaps somebody who'd played before. I just think that if you went back over all the seasons that we've done this, even though people who are down low on the list can win, over time, I think the percentages would chart out to this particular order.
So, AJ, before we get into revealing your archetypes, so what have been your thoughts overall about this second version of Brains versus Beauty versus Brawn?
You know, I like the season. I think we got an interesting cast, and I'm always going to be a fan of seasons where we have all new players. And, you know, certainly not all seasons with new players are going to work, because you're going to get a lot of variance in terms of whether people are really playing the game versus not playing the game. But I think this cast is really doing a nice job of seemingly playing the game. It's tough because they were there before the Second Chances, but we're seeing it after Second Chances. So following a Second Chance season, which was really great, and plus we knew all the players and had, you know, identified with so many of the characters on the show, it's a hard act to live up to. But I do think in terms of this season, even though I don't think we've seen much of the Beauty Tribe because of the way the game has gone, at least what we've seen with the two tribes that they focus most of their time on, Brains and Brawn, it's been at least interesting.
Yeah, I think that we're set up really well for this swap. And depending on how this goes, I think we could be on the heels of a really fun next couple of weeks on the show as we start to head towards the merge. All right, AJ, we always start off with the fresh meat, who you have as number 13 in your rankings. Who did you put in the number 13 seed in our March Madness archetype bracket?
Right. And let me say, it's not Mammoth. Sorry, Mammoth. You're not making this list either.
They're going to battle the four seed. They're going to play the X Factor in round one.
Yeah. I'm not sure this season that you know, this was really hard. And the reason this was really hard is because normally we would have had one more week to do this. And I think in that week, we probably would have seen a lot more of the Beauty Tribe. And because we really haven't seen much of what was going on at Gondol Camp, it's really hard to know exactly which Beauty fits which role. And I think you can make an argument for mixing up a lot of the Beauties around. I think everybody else, I have a pretty firm grasp of where I think they belong. So if you're going to argue with me on 12 and 13 here, I'm happy to flip them around. But for me, Fresh Meat, just pretty much by process of elimination, is Michelle.
Michelle, okay.
Yeah. And it's just basically because I don't see anything going on there on the beach strategy-wise from her. I mean, we haven't seen the need for it either, but everybody else kind of slots into other areas, and by default, it's going to be her. I think we got rid of a lot of, we got rid of Darnell, who could have been Fresh Meat. You certainly could make the argument that Alicia didn't know what she was doing out there and was not playing Survivor, so she could have been Fresh Meat. There are options for other people, but they're gone. And I just think it's the nature of the fact that, the Brawn tribe is kind of mat singing here, that we haven't really learned enough for me to truly discern if I'm right with Michelle. But I do think it would be, you know, Beauty Girl here. I think Michelle's the one I'm picking.
AJ, I'm curious about your process when you do this. Like, when you have the beginning of the season, are you already looking at people for certain spots where, say, like a Beast Mode Cowboy feels like that he probably would be, you know, your old reliable, like from a mile away, but then he ends up going out? Like you had said, maybe Alicia might be a fit here for Fresh Meat, and then she's not here anymore. So how does that change things up where you have somebody who might be a perfect person for an archetype and then they're gone?
Yeah, I think as the weeks go on, you do get to know a little bit more about these characters, and they tend to slot into at least one or two areas. You know, you're not going to have someone who you have no idea where to put them. It's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle where you have all the pieces of the frame and you separate them to the side. And then you have the pieces with the jagged edges in the middle, and they're in this pile here. And you kind of know where basically like, all right, it's either going to be A, B, C, or it's going to be B, C, D, or something like that. Yeah, absolutely. Caleb was going to be all reliable. There's no question about it. He, you know, yeah. My basic definition is someone who's ready to give maximum effort. I mean, if that doesn't describe Caleb, I don't know what what does.
He's a max effort guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, reliable meaning you know what you're going to get from him, always going to give maximum effort in the challenges. And I mean, that's what caused him to leave the game because he didn't know when to quit and his body gave out on him. So totally, he was right in line there. And then, you know, once he goes out, I have to start moving pieces around and maybe moving to a second choice option for that, which moves something else around. Eventually, they all fall into place for the most part. But yeah, you know, I write it in pencil early on. It helps when you have people on the show now, and I don't know if it's because they've listened to our podcast. I'd like to think it is, but I'm not arrogant enough to say yes, they've been listening. But I hear people talk about loose cannons and narcissists and cheerleaders and things on the show, and I'm just like, hey, well, this is making this easy.
Now, AJ, also, I think that this is going to be a very interesting round of archetypes because that this is the earliest in the season we've ever had to do this. That I think that typically we've done this either post-swap, but also this is the earliest that we've ever done it episode-wise, only 4 episodes in. So we're actually doing this at a point when we have less information about the players than we ever did. Considering last season, I think we got down to 13 players at the merge. That's when we did this, heading into the merge episode. This is before we even get to the swap. So I would expect the results this season to probably be a little more all over the board by the time we get to the end of the season.
I agree. I mean, I think what you have to understand is that we are taking a snapshot of the season at this time. And what happens is generally people slot into roles based on what's no longer there. And if, you know, if you have somebody who is being some sort of, you know, master manipulator, mad scientist, and they go out, that creates a void that someone who may have been some other category sees, oh, well, that the crafty, you know, sneaky person is gone. Maybe I can fill that role. And so they shift into that role. But, you know, by the time you get to 12, usually, we've, you know, 12 or 13, they've fallen into place nicely. But, you know, at the beginning, you sometimes have multiple people competing for the same style of play. And it does tend to whittle itself out as you get closer to 13.
Oh, so let's talk about Michelle here in this spot. And of course, I think I know where you're going with number 12 with the ninja based on your setup. So is there anything from her that you're seeing that you especially don't like that ends up with her as fresh meat? Or is it just because almost from a vacuum of that we haven't seen very much from her at all that she ends up slotting into fresh meat?
Yeah, I think it's more of a vacuum. I think it's just the sense that you know, we didn't see practically anything from her last week because it was all just the reaction to, you know, Caleb and you know, obviously Sydney and Debbie and the three of them getting hurt at the challenge. So we were seeing reaction. We weren't seeing gameplay. You know, we haven't seen a lot of gameplay from that tribe. So it's just hard. I think I've seen less from her than the other two girls in that tribe. And I think that's just what it amounts to. I think it's a trio with a definite leader and a pair of followers. You know, at least I remember Michelle's name.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's hard about this with trying to pick apart what's going on with these three women in that beauty tribe is that they've never gone to tribal council. And I really feel like that so much of the airtime that we spent at the beauty tribe was devoted to both either Ty looking for the idol or the bromance between Ty and Beast Mode Cowboy, that there really wasn't a lot of oxygen left to sort of explore the relationship of what was going on with these other three women. So this might be a thing where by the time we start seeing more of them, we have a completely different perspective on what's going on with Michelle and Julia and Anna. But at this point in time, hard to argue with the pick.
Right. And on top of that, I would say that it's not to get too much into winner's edit, but there's also invisible edit. And part of the invisible edit is if Michelle was doing anything strategic, they probably would have latched onto it, at least shown us something by now. Just something as a hint for what's to come. And because they haven't, it means it's not there. I mean, that's what I have to go on at this point. But you're right. I mean, she could end up being, you know, the most brilliant mastermind of them all. And I wouldn't be surprised in the sense that I haven't seen anything. But it's not I haven't seen anything because she's not doing anything necessarily. It's I haven't seen anything because they're not showing us anything.
The good news for her is that a lot of times on Survivor that they start showing more about you when your boot is coming, like not usually the case where somebody's completely invisible and then all of a sudden they're voted out the next episode. So I think we're going to get to know Michelle and our next player probably better before it's all said and done. And that is the ninja, AJ. And I don't think you're going with Anna here.
No, I think this is definitely Julia. I mean, you know, when I was making this list, I actually did forget her name. She was the one who was like, and wait, no, who's there's just one more beauty girl. I don't know her name. And, you know, she's the one sitting out the challenges more often than not. It's just like, oh, Julia. That's right. I just don't know anything about her at all. I don't even remember hearing her talk. I know she has, but it's been 4 weeks and we've spent so much time everywhere else that if you ask me to name all the contestants on the show, she'd be the last one I'd come up with by leaps and bounds.
By definition, that is how you describe your ninja. If you were to name all the players on the season, who is the one person that you do forget? That ends up being Julia. We'll see ultimately where her game takes her. She is the youngest player on the season by far. I don't think it's necessarily even close. And ultimately, while she's not doing bad, we're not getting the edit of, boy, this 19-year-old is annoying. We're just not seeing very much of her on the show right now.
Yeah, and part of the reason I am also happy putting her here, you know, I'm sure a lot of people would say, well, she's so young, maybe she's the fresh meat. I'm like, well, that's fine. The difference between 12 and 13, yeah, neither one of those spots really has a realistic chance of winning in my mind. But either mm-hmm. one has a really good chance of being dragged along as kind of a goat for a long distance too. So it doesn't mean they won't make the final tribal. It's just I haven't seen anything that says that they would get any votes there.
Not only are we doing this after four episodes, it's also, I think, a very odd fourth episode where we didn't even see 1 second back at the beauty camp. So other than seeing the beauty players at the challenge, we didn't see them go back after the challenge. We didn't see them before the challenge because we spent 30 minutes of the episode at the challenge dealing with all the medical emergencies. So not only is this only four episodes in, it's really three episodes in as far as this beauty tribe is concerned and three episodes in which they never went to a tribal.
Yeah, it's certainly made this task really difficult. But I would say even in the limited amount of time that we have had with the beauties, like you said, it was all about Caleb and it was all about Ty. And, you know, is it just because their personalities are so interesting? Yeah, it might be. But I think part of it is also that perhaps Julia, Michelle, neither one was bringing anything to the table that, you know, had them come in at all to the mm-hmm. picture. And so I think the fact that whatever time we did there was so monopolized shows that, you know, had Caleb stayed, I don't think these two would be doing anything anyway. It would still mm-hmm. be the Caleb and Ty show.
Let's go on to number 11 here on the list, which is the cheerleader. And we had some discussion of the cheerleader on the episode this week. Where do you end up going with your cheerleader here in Survivor Koh-Rong?
Well, you know, after that episode, had she survived, there was no way I couldn't put Alicia here just because. I mean, when everybody's calling her the cheerleader, how could I not? I think, wow, that was pretty on the nose there. But just generally, the cheerleader is one of two personality types. Either it's kind of the house mom, kind of the mother figure, the father figure, the someone who wants to take care of everybody, the Carol from The Walking Dead when she's in that Carol cheerleader mode.
Right.
But and the other thing is someone who's always like, let's think of the tribe, let's do this as a tribe, let's work for the common good. Everybody is you know, everybody is wonderful and we should all work together and can't we all get along kind of thing. I think we saw Debbie earlier in the season physically grabbing pom-poms and cheering, but I think that's Debbie pretending to be a cheerleader. That's her putting on a facade and a persona. I think she's very aware of the different type of archetypes that play on the show, not necessarily my list, but she's aware of a character that she's portraying. she's not that character. She's doing a Carol there. She is pretending to be this character. I would say the cheerleader for this season is actually Ty.
Yeah, I think in my head that was the first person I thought of as the cheerleader. So let's talk about cheerleader Ty.
Peek-a-boo.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, obviously, he is, you know, all concerned about nature and concerned about, you know, everybody doing well and playing their hardest and working as a team. And he just seems like a nice, kind guy who really cares about the other people on his tribe. Even if they're not getting along, he's going to care about them as humans and individuals. And, you know, people like that tend to lack that killer instinct that is required to go really far in this game and certainly win the game at the end by, you know, throwing other people under the bus. So that's why the cheerleader is so low. But generally speaking, if they're well-liked and they, because they're not the type of person to stab other people in the back, they can go quite far and even making it to the final tribal, because people know that once they get there, they'll kind of go, yeah, you're right. Give it to the other guy, the other girl. They've done a good job. Vote for them.
I do think that he is going to probably be pretty loyal to that beauty group. I don't see him really flipping on them and trying to go in a different direction. So I think that as the cheerleader, I could definitely see him also being somebody who that group rallies around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, nobody, generally speaking, nobody is out to get the cheerleader. I mean, I know it has happened in the past. You know, save the cheerleader, save the world.
Claire Bear.
Claire Bear, there you go.
AJ, stop trying to make heroes happen.
Aw, fetch.
Yeah, so Ty Trang, the cheerleader, I'm surprised that you have him, I guess this is, again, the archetype, not the player, but so far away from being able to win, I guess you feel like that he doesn't have that killer instinct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, cheerleaders in the past have been like, you know, Dawn and Lisa Welchel, and, you know, they've gone very far in this game. But when you get to the final tribal council and you have to speak poorly of the other people, you know, or at least, you know, put your own moves in this kind of cutthroat kind of frame of reference in order to get people to vote for you, they just can't do it. I've seen it now time and time again where maybe they have a chance to win, but they have to stick up for themselves, and they're more likely to say, oh, you know, but they did a good job too. And because their ethos is, you know, common good and everybody's great, it's hard for them to say, look at me, look at me.
Okay, let's talk about the loose cannon here. Last season, you had Abby Maria as the loose cannon, and I think that you were probably right on with that.
With me, you're dead.
It doesn't get more textbook than that, does it?
No. All right. The loose cannon this season, I think this is probably the trickiest one we've had to figure out so far.
Well, I think it kind of comes down to a 1 and a 1A here. I mean, just based on the fact that there was such a toxic atmosphere at the Braun camp, with the bullying going on and, you know, disavow, we're talking definitely that you can go 1 and 1A here between Jason and Scott. It's just a question of which one do I think is the most likely to really explode, you know, and just go bat poo insane at some point and just really rankle people. And I think for me, it's more likely to be Jason.
See, I wasn't sure if you were going to go with Jason and Scott as the marriage of convenience. And then if you did that, I wasn't sure where you're going to go with that. But okay, so Jason as the loose cannon.
Yeah, I just think he's the one person on this tribe who seems to be not just in word, but also in deed, just abrasive. I think when this merge swap, when these situations and he gets to interact with other people, you know, you've been saying how it's going to be very interesting to see if he acts the same way he acted towards Alicia towards somebody else. And I think the odds are probably pretty good that somebody's going to rub him the wrong way. And just the way that he's really taking charge of, like, well, you know, in the battle between Jason and Scott, I mean, it kind of seemed like Jason was very much more physical and towards getting the idol and, like, you know, oh, yeah, it's got holding his hand out, and Jason's like, yep, this is the idol, and, you know, doesn't even let him touch it. And it just seems like he's more controlling. And someone who's controlling like that, when now confronted with other people who perhaps aren't going to play, you know, submissive to that, I think he's going to react. And it's that reaction that I'm afraid of. I'm not as afraid with Scott. Although, quite frankly, like I said, they're like a 1 and 1A here. They're definitely two peas in a pod in terms of the way they've been acting. But even Scott, when he was attacking Alicia, was it was mean, but it wasn't... You know, it was still kind of a passive meanness, if you know what I'm saying. You know, who's just like, mm-hmm. you know, why don't you just go over there and be the cheerleader? It was a suggestion, whereas Jason's just like, hey, Blondie, you know, and you know, had to leave the shelter because he was getting all steamed up and everything. So I just think he's more of a hothead, and that's why he fits here.
You have the loose cannon here at number 10 in your rankings. Is that more of a statement about Jason and slotting him into the number 10, or just more of a statement about the actual role that the loose cannon plays?
No, it's definitely the role. I always just do the roles, and I don't worry about who the people are. You know, I've had diplomats who I knew had no chance of winning the game end up diplomats, and I've had people who I really liked way down low, you know, 9, 10, 11. It's just that's the role they play. They just, you know, they happen to be very good examples, and sometimes you can outkick your coverage and your ranking by playing a smart game. Not very few of these... are in a vacuum. So a loose cannon who also is a good strategist can certainly parlay that into like a Hans-like finish. It's just you're going to have a target on you, and it's just a question of whether or not the other people in the roles around you are going to recognize that and take you out or try and drag you along as the heel for as long as possible. And it becomes a, you know, kind of a battle of wits there, whether or not you're able to, you know, be this loose cannon, like an Abby Maria. How long are they willing to tolerate you? If a long time, you could make it to the end. And if you've got smarts about you and you've actually done game moves, then maybe you can actually convince the jury to win. You know, like Russell was very close to winning twice. And I would argue that he probably should have won his first time if he had just fessed up to what he was doing. So, you know, he was the ultimate loose cannon in that he put himself in the perfect position to be a heel, got to the final, and all he had to do is say, hey, this is what I did, and he wouldn't do it.
So hypothetically, let's just say that you felt like Jason had a really good shot to win, and I'm not saying that you do, but let's just say you were really high on Jason for whatever reason. Would you try to shoehorn him into, say, like a mad scientist because that's a better chance to win in your rankings, or he is a loose cannon, doesn't matter how good his chances are, that's where he goes?
No, I think it's hard enough to find a mapping that works. I would say there's probably only two or three different mappings in every season that I feel comfortable doing, and I'm not going to shoehorn just for the sake of shoehorning. I'm happy to let a loose cannon win if the loose cannon deserves to win. I mean, you know, last season I had Jeremy as the narcissist, and I thought Jeremy had a really good chance to win, but that's kind of where I saw him last season at the time. So, I'm fine with the fact that he won from that position. To me, it keeps the system honest in that I'm not deliberately rigging and stacking the deck so that 1, 2, and 3 always win. I think you got to let the data just, you know, show what the data shows.
I respect the process. I want to just understand how this all works, how the sausage is made.
Yep, fair enough. Fair enough. Just, I'll be sure to put a blog post on 538.com with Dave Silver, explain it all.
Okay. So what a great segue to get into number 9, the narcissist, which last season you said was Jeremy Collins. He was very upset about that archetype that you labeled him with. That actually, this is what he said when he heard that podcast.
These guys are so dumb.
Yeah, he said he would not be trading with you any longer in the Rob Has a Fantasy Football League, and you really made him upset. So just to spite you, he went out and won the entire season by a vote of 10-0.
Yeah, I got him almost in a trap there because I he said he was not going to trade with me anymore, and I said, "Is that because you think your team is so perfect and wonderful?" And he just said, "I refuse to answer that. I'm not going to fall into your trap." So we had a nice little exchange there.
All right, now this season, AJ, I think that you probably have a much easier task casting the narcissist.
Yeah, I actually think we have two potential candidates for narcissism.
Two potential ones. I feel like there's one really great fit, but I'm interested to know where you went.
Yeah, part of the problem is that when you have a season where you have basically said you are either, you know, a brawn, which conveys a sense of the old reliable person, if you're the beauty, which conveys a sense of the narcissist, and you know, you have the brains, which conveys the sense of maybe Captain Loophole, the mad scientist there, you know, you're stacking the deck with these particular archetypes, and it makes it a little more difficult. But that said, I mean, it really comes down to is Nick more of a narcissist or is Peter more of a narcissist? And quite frankly, when everybody on the show is calling Peter a narcissist, it really does make it a slam dunk, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really comes down to, I think, and tell me if this is how you look at it. Do you have another spot for either Nick or Peter where if the narcissist will work for both of them, do you go with who is the bigger narcissist, or it's like, oh, I think that Nick could be the blah, blah, blah. So let me put Nick there and then put Peter here.
Yeah, I when I was starting to write this one up, I put Peter / Nick, figured I would probably go with Peter. And then I started filling in all the other slots as I could see him and saw which was left. And so when I had the one that was left, I was like, yeah, no, that's Nick. So I was definitely able to do that. So, Peter, was where I was leaning anyway. And once it all broke down and there was that one spot left for either Nick or Peter, to go into, Nick was a better fit there. So, yeah, we're going to go with Dr. Obama as our narcissist.
Yeah. On the one hand, Nick has talked about, you know, how I'm good looking. I can't help it. Okay. Like my life is better because I'm good looking. But then you have Peter who's said this.
Although Liz and I are good looking people and we have great smiles, we're actually out for blood.
So, yeah, just because they're good looking and have great smiles doesn't mean that they're going to be pushovers in this game.
Right. No, not at all. yeah, I mean, I think if I was wavering at all, his bold face assertion at the tribal council where Liz went home, when he was just like cock of the walk running the show, it's just like, no, dude, seriously, you are that full of yourself. You're just going to basically say, oh, I'm in charge here, everybody. Hello, I'm in charge. You know, that just was like way over the top. And only something a true narcissist would do.
Yeah. All right. So do you think that he's in a good spot to be able to rebound from being the narcissist?
I think he's got a shot, but it's not anything that he's going to do. I think what you saw a little bit after the incident there is that Debbie went up to him and kind of tried to reel him in a little bit and say, hey, look, you know, I'm sorry, but this is kind of where it is. And I think that perhaps it's a benefit to Debbie to use Peter as kind of a meat shield at this point, especially if they're going to go into some sort of swap. And if the two of them can go in together, well, you know, he's probably the one who's going to be voted out first. So that's probably why she's doing that. Very smart. But that said, if she's going to want to keep him around for that purpose, then that helps him stick around at least long enough for him to meet new people who perhaps don't see him in the same light. He's got at least one chance to make a new first impression on people. I don't know that he's capable of doing it, but the chance is still there.
Number eight is the old reliable. Of course, we talked about how Beast Mode Cowboy would have been a perfect old reliable at the end of the day, but he is no longer with us in the game. So now it's time to come up with a new old reliable. Where are you going, AJ?
I say that the old is not necessarily the part that I emphasize. It's the reliable part. But sometimes the shoe does fit.
What about this case?
I would say sometimes, you know, the old shoe does fit. And Joseph is the perfect case. I mean, he has shown himself to be very competitive in challenges. He's not someone who's going to, like, go in there and be lost at sea. You know, we've seen in the past people like Keith Nail who, like, were able to, like, somehow just always be competitive and always maybe not win all the time, but just be competitive. And I think, you know, Joseph has done a really nice job of proving that he can be competitive in these challenges. And, you know, I don't think there's necessarily going to be any strategy from him. I think it's going to be just he's what you see is what you get. You know what to expect. And, the pages of the book match what's on the cover. And I think that is old reliable.
See, that's what Peter said about him. And then Jeff called him out and said, you can't judge a book by its cover. Remember Tony?
Yes, but Joseph is no mad scientist.
That Joe is so much old reliable. Here's when Debbie wanted him to vote a certain way that she had to get this excited.
We need to be subversive. We need to implant counterintelligence. We need to move with a purpose, Joe. And we need to do it now.
Yeah, come on, Joe. Let's go.
Yeah, well, and he's going to go. He's going to go exactly where she tells him to go. and part of that's part of the reliability, too. I think that in terms of the Debbie Joseph alliance, I think, you know, he's found that she's his partner in crime for this. And maybe he thinks he's in the marriage of convenience with her, but I don't think that's the case. But I think he's going to be loyal to her. And that, again, is another aspect of being reliable, is that you know you can count on his vote if he's in your camp.
Okay, halfway there, AJ, let's start to talk about the marriage of convenience. And, of course, this is the marriage of convenience number two, so we're going to skip that, right?
Right, because if you say what two is, then you know what one is usually. So we're going to skip that until we get to one, so kind of build suspense a little bit more.
That brings us to number six. That's your idiot savant. So of the players left in the game, who is your idiot savant here?
Well, my idiot savant here happens to be, you know, it was a tall order filling this role, but I think there's no taller order in this game than Mr. Scott Pollard. And I just think that his grasp of strategy in this game is not quite, it's off. I don't think that the way he's playing the game is the way that you're supposed to play Survivor. But because he's been aligned with Jason, I think that it's worked out for him. And I don't think he should still be here. I really don't. It's just luck.
You know, I've said that I feel like that he's playing a very, very old school game. I feel like that he's playing the kind of game that you would expect in like the first 10 seasons of Survivor, where he does seem like he's extremely loyal to his alliance. The whole thing that happened with Jennifer, where it's like, you know, I told her I wasn't going to vote against her, and so I have to keep my word to her. He seems like he's blindly loyal to Jason. I don't know if he's the kind of guy who's going to be able to make a big move in terms of like flipping against people that he's loyal to.
Yeah, and just, you know, his whole thing with like, you know, well, I promised her I wouldn't vote for her, so I didn't vote for her. Like, really? Like, what? How does that work? That didn't make any sense to me at all. And it's a decision that if he had said that to somebody else other than Alicia, it might have been, you know, inspiration for her to rally the troops against him and somehow turn it around. I think he was just very fortunate that she didn't have any capital and no way to turn that into something to get him out. So in that sense, you know, like, it's a move he made. It's a decision he made. It's a strategy he made. It should have bit him, and it didn't. And that's kind of what the idiot savant is. It's someone who's still surviving despite what they're doing.
So for Scott, AJ, I know you write about sports professionally. Did you have any opinion on Scott Pollard coming into this season?
Not really. I mean, I remember that he went to Kansas. I don't really follow the NBA at all. I had remembered him from his time as a Jayhawk. But other than that, nah, no opinion whatsoever. If it was a baseball player, I'd definitely have some opinions. But, you know, generally speaking, I just think because the NBA players, like, you know, Cliff Robinson, like, they're so big as individuals, you just look at them and you just go, oh my goodness, look at him. I mean, you can't hide. And when you can't hide, every move you make is going to be noticed. And when you start making stupid moves, that's absolutely going to be noticed. And I think he's making a lot of stupid moves, and it hasn't cost him yet. But, you know, going to another tribe where they don't know him, and they, you know, they're still going to see this huge guy, and he's going to have a target on him, and he might not have Jason around to protect him anymore.
Well, I actually think that's a better thing for him if they get split up in this swap, because I think that together they're going to be too much of a target, but we'll see. I've been impressed with him in terms of that when these people that are either athletes or have some other notoriety or wealth from their like main occupation, that when they get out there I'm always glad to see that they're not like, what the hell do I need this aggravation for? And not just trying to give up after a couple of days. So I will say, you know, good on Scott, at least for showing no signs of quit so far. It seems like, you know, he's in this thing to play as hard as he can.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. You'd hate to see someone who like shows up and just says, ah, I don't need it. I ain't got no time for this. But, you know, Scott, for his NBA career, especially towards the end, I mean, he wasn't doing much by way of playing time. I mean, he was used to just sitting around. So in terms of that, I mean, he's probably got a lot of experience just hanging out at camp, sitting in the shelter and just waiting for the game to be over.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much is Survivor. I mean, you basically sit there all day and then, you know, for 20 minutes, they say, okay, go run around. And then that's it. You basically go back to sitting around and just talking to people.
Yeah, you know, it's except for the 1 hour digging in the sand sessions that
right.
spring up from time to time. Yeah, it's short spurts. I'm sure his athleticism, you know, is going to pay off. But once you get to the point when we get to individual game, I mean, who's going to keep him around? I mean, there's really no point.
Top five, baby.
Top five, baby.
Captain Loophole. Who's your Captain Loophole this season?
Yeah, well, the Captain Loophole, of course, is going to tend to be your super fan, someone who really knows the game inside and out, someone who really has a grasp of the history of the game and knows they're doing there. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily able to translate that knowledge into success. You know, Max Dawson would have been Captain Loophole most probably had he lasted long enough. Didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, you have someone who used to blog for you, man. I'm going to guess that he kind of knew the show going in. And so Nick definitely would fit in as someone who kind of has a grasp of what you're supposed to do. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to pull it off, but he really hasn't done anything that makes me think that he's not able to either. And again, part mm-hmm. of that is just we haven't seen a lot from them, but I get a good vibe from him in terms of knowledge of the game and strategy. I may be misguided, but I do get a good vibe from him, and I think that perhaps, depending on how this split comes about, he might be able to work some magic there.
I'm not as down on him as some people are. A lot of people feel like, okay, well, obviously people don't like him and he's on the outs, but he's survived the point in the game where he's probably the likely person to be voted out. And then it does seem as though Beauty is going to have a numerical majority almost anywhere that he goes, you would imagine, unless there's some scenario where he ends up on a tribe where he's only with maybe two or three beauties and he's outnumbered by some combination of brains and brawn. And I don't necessarily see that that combination is going to be a majority and then say, hey, let's target the biggest guy from Beauty. It certainly could happen, but I don't think that's a likely scenario going into this week. So I am higher on him. Maybe it's because, you know, I do root for the guy who used to blog on my website, but I don't think it's been a disaster yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. I think he's...
Is that damning with faint praise?
Well, like I said, we haven't seen anything, so it's hard. It's really hard this year. It's not like we've been watching him for 3 weeks straight doing stuff and knowing that, oh, you know what? He's trying way too hard. Like, I don't know. It's just more of a sense. And it's yeah, I think this is the year where we're doing, for the Beauty Tribe, we're definitely doing more first impressions than anything else mm-hmm. because I've yet to see anything more than a first impression. But as much as I disliked him in the first episode with his comments about, you know, how wonderfully beautiful he is, ever since then, I actually have gotten a better vibe from him. So maybe that bodes well. And if I didn't know his history blogging, maybe I wouldn't be loopholing him here. But I do, and I can't unring the bell. So
yeah, and just factor in there that, you know, on the other side of that camera, there's a producer asking the question of what's it like to be on the Beauty Tribe. And so I think that you have these people who do try to do what they're asked to do in those interview questions. So I think that don't necessarily hold that against him too much. And then the other thing, just like we were saying with the women earlier in this conversation, of you had Ty and Caleb, who just sucked up so much of the oxygen in the screen time back at that beauty tribe. They never went to a tribal council. We didn't see 1 second of their camp life in this fourth episode. So we just don't have that much to go off of with this beauty tribe. And so I think other than Ty, I don't think we have a great read on any of the other people that are going to be going into this swap from that tribe.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
The X Factor. I'm very interested to see where you're going to go with this X Factor. Last season, it was Kelly Wigglesworth, the one player from the first season, the one player who is different from everybody else. But I don't see somebody like that. So I'm interested to know just how deep you have to dig to get to the person who is the X Factor here.
Yeah, well, you know, there's certainly a few people who stand out as different from everybody else. I mean, Ty is certainly a unique individual. I don't think we've seen anything like Ty on the show before. So he was certainly a candidate for this. And I think Alicia was also a candidate for this had she still been in there, just based on the fact that, so what is she doing on that tribe? She doesn't really look like she belongs on Braun. And I didn't necessarily buy Prope's explanation of what she was doing there.
She doesn't take lip from anybody.
Okay, sure. does that make you Braun? Okay, maybe it does. But yeah, so
I guess so.
I guess
Brawny attitude.
There you go. And of course, Joseph would also potentially be there just because of his age. But for me, looking at who's left, I would say Sydney is the X factor because she's the only woman left on the Braun tribe. And so that puts her in a unique situation. She's flying solo as a female on her tribe right now. So that's A. But B, I don't remember a contestant that is physically as strong as her from a female point of view. Like, generally speaking, even the strong female competitors are not this. You know, this is pretty impressive to see someone who's a physical threat and be a female. It's just, I'm very impressed by her. And she does seem to have a grasp of the game. So I do like her chances potentially going forward. I've seen a few people throw out that she should be fresh meat, and I don't get that at all. I think she's actually got a really good grasp of what's going on. But it's her physical prowess that's what's making her stand out for me as the X factor.
Yeah, I've been impressed with her so far. And I think that she's been in a really tough spot with these two guys who I think probably if you gave her truth serum, I think that maybe she is not loving those being with those guys in the tribe, but she has recognized. And I think she's done a much better job than Alicia ultimately did in terms of figuring out a way to have a working relationship and be a solid number moving forward. From what I saw in the preview for the tribe swap, she seems like she's the person. Her reaction, I thought, is very big to the tribe swap. So maybe she's feeling like that she has some second life now that she can escape that Braun tribe. So I think that she's one of the players that I'm really keeping my eye on moving forward.
This is someone who looks like they really have a chance to succeed in the game and is actually performing at the challenges to a level that befits what, you know, you look at her just on the surface, you look at her and you go, wow, she's going to be a competition beast. And I think she's done really nicely in the competitions as well.
Hard to get a real sense of that from the tribal portion of the game. But as we move towards the merge, we'll get a chance to see her really in action and see what she can do. All right. So now let's get to the top three here. We have the mad scientist. Technically, it's a top four because we have to get into the marriage of convenience. But the number three ranked person on your list is the mad scientist.
Yeah. And this is the person who has all the scheming and plotting, all the crazy plans, the person who's watching everybody and noticing things that other people aren't noticing, and perhaps even playing possum and is a wolf in sheep's clothing and is portraying themselves as something that they're not and is telling us, the audience, that that's what's going on. This isn't just kind of, you know, fan fiction going on here. This is us actually hearing from the horse's mouth what's going on. So I think you'd be able to tell at this point that I'm talking about the woman of many jobs, of many hats, Debbie.
The bomb doors are open. Prepare to fire.
Yes, Debbie. Are you loving Debbie? Are you on the, are you one of the hashtag Debhead?
Well, I certainly thought she was totally bonkers early on. And I definitely saw her as being the traditional wacky outcast who's not going to last too long. But she's narrating what's going on. She's become the narrator of the season for us. And the fact that she's able to so succinctly tell us all the plotting and planning that she's doing, you know, it endears her to me, and it makes her the mad scientist. She's telling us. We're hearing it. This isn't us trying to figure out, well, hopefully we'll see it in the secret scenes, or, you know, maybe, you know, oh, please, Rob, don't forget to ask her in the exit interview what was going on there. She's telling us. We're getting this season from her point of view. And so it makes it very obvious to me that it may not work. She may be like end up plotting herself out of a good position at some point, but she totally took control of her tribe. She was in a total bottom position and totally turned around to where she's running the show. And I think that's a legit assessment of what's going on here. And really in a way that only a mad scientist could.
As a chemist, for the first time, she is quite literally our first mad scientist.
She's not a sweet scientist. No,
not
she is a mad scientist.
good reference. yeah. So here she is at number three in your rankings in terms of the position that she's in as the mad scientist. So like Nicole, do you feel like that she's in a position where she can win this thing?
I think she's definitely in a position where she can win this thing. I don't necessarily know that she'll be able to contain herself from doing something that's going to shoot herself in the foot at some point down the line. I do know that she won't go down without a fight, and at least that is a good thing.
So let's circle back to our marriage of convenience. We've only got three people left, so I feel like that your marriage of convenience is pretty much on the nose, but we'll see who you have in the top position and the bottom position here in your Neil and Aubrey marriage of convenience.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there are two people who kind of were thrust together because it was Debbie and Joseph in one pair and it was Liz and Peter in the other pair. And these were the two that were left and they kind of were forced together. You know, generally, I like to do the marriage of convenience after we've had a swap or something because it ends up kind of being the two people who are, you know, oh, we're the only two people in our tribe who are left. We have to work together. That kind of is a way, if you don't have an actual like showmance or some sort of thing going on there, that's kind of where the marriage comes from. Kind of your, you know, Denise and Malcolm kind of thing. Like, well, the only ones left, I guess we're together. This is a case where they're definitely the marriage. And you're right. It is a question of who do I think is one and who do I think is two. Typically, you need a defining moment of that. Or a stronger personality. And we haven't had that yet. This isn't a case where it's like Sophie and Albert, where, you know, you flat out see Sophie telling Albert to, you know, hey, why don't you just come over here and pick my things up for me and eliminate yourself from the challenge. And like, you know, we knew that Sophie was in charge of that marriage there. I'm going to go with Aubrey as the one here. I just don't necessarily think we've seen that. But my feeling is that because she's the one who has Debbie's ear, that if nothing else, she's going to be the one with the pipeline of information. And yes, we're going to have a switch and they might end up separated or in different circumstance. But at least for right now, and all I can do is take the snapshot right now, I think Neil is more of the follower. He's a follower in Ice Cream Pants.
More
but
the
follower.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think Neil is more of the follower. I think Neil thinks he's the leader, but I think Aubrey's really the one controlling things here, and I think she's going to be a lot more manipulative down the line.
See, I would have had it the other way around, just simply for the fact that from what we've heard about Aubrey, she doesn't like to talk strategy, and that was from something, you know, we got from Liz, where she said that it was really Aubrey likes to talk about Survivor, but, you know, she's probably more interested in dealing with people on a personal level, but didn't really want to scheme and plot. Now, maybe she didn't want to scheme and plot with Liz to any degree, and maybe she's doing it more behind the scenes, but I felt like that Neil, and maybe ultimately it'll bear out that Aubrey is the more successful player of the two, that we did see him scheming more. We heard Peter call Neil out at tribal council level. Well, we're not going to go with your plan. So I feel like that Neil is the person driving the strategy more between that pair. But I mean, it's really hard to tell. It could, you know, flip a coin right now.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, if you want to flip these two at some point down the line, I obviously we'll see that. But I don't know. It just seems that up is down and down is up in that Brains tribe. And I think that Aubrey, from what I've seen, I think she's playing a much more subtle game. And I think that she really, in their relationship, is probably going to be the one who's going to have that final say when push comes to shove.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. So officially, that is Neil as your number 7 ranked, Marriage of Convenience number 2. And then that would be Aubrey in the number 2 slot, the Marriage of Convenience part 1, as the 2nd ranked best chance to win. Last season, you had Andrew and Tasha in that spot, with Tasha being the number 2. And she did finish tied for 2nd place. So that was a pretty good call, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes we blind squirrel catches the nut, right?
Well, you were almost locked in last season with these rankings when you had your diplomat, number 1, Kelly Wentworth. She was basically one challenge away from being possibly the winner. She could have gotten rid of Jeremy at that final 4. Can you keep the magic going with your diplomat this season, who was my winner pick originally, Anna?
Yeah, who knows? Like I said, Anna almost gets diplomat by default. But I will say, of the 3 beauty girls who seem to be a solid alliance, who seem to be locked in place, I just think she was the one who was kind of talking to Caleb and kind of reaching out and making the inroads to the other side. So if any of the 3 is going to be considered the leader, the one to cross aisles and try and bring people in and make the call, I think it's her. Like I said, I wish I had seen more of their camp to kind of get a better sense of the dynamic. But I do think that once you throw them in with other people, she's probably the most likely to get along with Sydney, to get along with Debbie, to get along with Aubrey, to be able to put up with Jason. And so in that sense, I think that she's really temperamentally wise suited well for being a diplomat.
Now, we'll see. We haven't seen any interaction between her and the other tribe. The best we've seen of this is her reaching out to Caleb and sort of making a deal with him to work together. And as we've been saying, this beauty tribe is so hard to read because we just have not seen them in action going to a vote. So let's see what happens with Anna. I mean, as a poker player, she would be probably somebody who you would think could be wheeling and dealing. And then ultimately, we'll see how she's able to do. I think maybe the one downside is sometimes you see these people that are sort of at the head of an alliance and they basically don't want to work with the other side. You know, they want to sort of be the person who is calling the shots and is telling the other side, you know, that they're going to take it and like it. So we'll see ultimately how her leadership style is.
Yeah, I mean, it also comes down to, you know, when they do this swap. I mean, if it's a 2-2-2 situation, I think that puts her in a much better position than if it's, you know, 4-4-3, you know, kind of thing. Like if she's able to be put in a situation where she has to work with somebody else, I think that'll help her a lot more than, you know, if she has a choice whether or not to work with somebody else.
All right, AJ, give us the archetypes one more time from 13-1.
Okay, to review, we had Fresh Meat was Michelle. We had the Ninja, who was Julia. We had the Cheerleader, who was Ty. We had the Loose Cannon, who was Jason. The Narcissist, who was Peter. Old Reliable, Joseph. Marriage of Convenience, number 2, or Beta, Neil. Idiot Savant, Scott. Captain Loophole, Nick. X Factor, Sydney. Mad Scientist, Debbie. Marriage of Convenience, 1, Alpha, Aubrey. And the Diplomat, Anna.
Really strong list, I think, this time, AJ. I feel like that there's no major qualms with anything you had going on here in the top 13. And we'll see what the reaction is in the comments and on Reddit and what people think about the top 13 bracket.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I encourage the feedback. I welcome the feedback. And, you know, this was, like I said, this was an uphill climb because we really don't know a lot about that beauty tribe. But I still think the roles that the three of them were going to play were these three, because I don't think there's anyone on the other tribes who would have slotted into these three. So in that sense, you know, maybe you juggle them around, the three ladies, but otherwise, I think it works.
It's time to get into our fantasy draft, which we are doing, and it really could go any way because you always, this fifth boot, first boot after a swap, tends to be somebody who we thought coming into it probably was not going to be somebody who's going home. That first boot after the swap has a long history of being somebody that we weren't expecting. So anything could happen. We could see a huge high draft pick go home early. The scoring system here is that it will be a snake draft. AJ will have the first pick because I won the league last season. I will then have two picks in a row after that, and so on and so forth. You get 1 point for making it through a tribal council without getting voted off. You get 2 points for winning immunity. You get 2 points for playing the hidden immunity idol. 3 points for making the final tribal council, and 3 points for each vote received at the final tribal council. Boy, this Jeremy Collins last season, that must be like go down as one of the all-time great Survivor fantasy plays of all time. I mean, he basically had like a LaDainian Tomlinson-esque Survivor fantasy draft for me last season.
Yeah, I think you could have just gone with Jeremy and nobody else and still come close to winning the darn thing. So, yeah.
Absolutely. A statistical anomaly between winning 10-0 in the final vote. He played two idols also. He made it through all the tribal councils. So he won an immunity at the end. So a huge, huge season for Jeremy Collins. The greatest Survivor fantasy season of all time. Okay, so now I will be hard-pressed to duplicate that. AJ, you have the first pick. Where are you going to go?
Oh, wow. Where am I going to go? It's tough. I think it'll probably get easier as we get a little bit further along, and I don't have as many options. You know what? I am going to go a lot deeper into this list than I usually do. I am going to go with... I'm going to go with Jason off the top.
Jason, and, number one draft pick off the board. Wow.
Yeah. I don't think he can win, but I think that speech that he gave in earshot of everybody may pay dividends in terms of them moving the tribes together, and people might have a different impression of him upon that. So I don't know if he can pull it off long term, but he could win some challenges too. And I know he has an idol, so.
Wow, I can't believe it. That was, I think some people might say that was a reach, AJ, to go with Jason number one.
Well, perhaps it was, but I stand by my decision.
Okay, Stephen Fishback has him as somebody he is risking the knowingest know-it-all trophy against, that Stephen Fishback feels good enough about him getting to a final three. So you are not alone in your endorsement of Jason.
Can I change my pick?
Okay. For me, I have two picks in a row here. I will start off with, you know, you don't change horses midstream. This is my winner pick. I feel like I have no reason to change things up. Give me Anna. She's the diplomat, and I feel good about her moving forward. No reason to not be bullish on Anna moving forward.
Okay.
All right.
I can see that. Yep.
And then I have the third pick. And in a show of solidarity for the first lady of podcasting, I will also take her winner pick. How about we laughed at Nicole Stradamus in the preseason when she was so high on Debbie, but give me Debbie as well.
Total blindside. Yeah,
I can see that. I almost took her at number one, but I just, there's something off about her that scares me.
Oh, yeah. There's things off about her. That's true.
Okay. So I have the next two picks.
Yes.
I'm going to go with my marriage pick here and pick Aubrey. And to follow that up, I'm not going with both because I don't know if they're going to be together or not. And if they get split up, that changes things. And I will go with Nick.
Okay, so Nick the pick at number five. So, all right, talk me through the Aubrey pick and then the Nick pick.
Like I said, I think to counteract your Debbie, I do think there's a better chance of Debbie and Aubrey ending up working together at some point. Which is a solid three for Aubrey. I mean, that's kind of a pick I like. If there's someone who is mad scientisting and the marriage is working with them, I think that's like almost a double deflection there for her, that she can throw either Debbie or Neil under the bus. And so I think that gives her survivability in that sense. And as for Nick, he's not the most physically threatening person, but he's got athletic ability. And I think, I think if the trio of beauty girls need him to be a number, then I think he's going to be able to survive for a while. It depends on the split, obviously, but I think I like his chances to make it a ways, not necessarily to the end, but a ways.
Good picks, AJ. I have two in a row. Give me at number six a person that was kind of high up on your rankings, a person I think is probably undervalued right now. I'm going to go with Sydney. I feel like that she is the person I think that could emerge from this Braun tribe with maybe the best chance to win. I think that all the focus is going to be on Jason and Scott, especially if people see those two as a pair moving forward. I think that she could be the person that ultimately gets forgotten about. And as you stated, she's somebody who's a physical threat. Maybe that makes her a target after the merge, but you feel like that she could win some challenges maybe down the road. So I will go with Sydney. And I've been very impressed with the way that she's been able to not rock the boat too much without just being somebody who we say is a total floater.
Yeah, I totally would have made her my next pick easily and almost picked her at five. So I think that's exactly where she should be going in these drafts, people.
Okay, good, good. Good value there at number six.
Yeah, good value pick, yeah. ADP is really, really right on here.
All right, the first pick of round four, he has an immunity idol. He's everybody's favorite. I will go with Mr. Ty Trang.
It's a very good pick. I was hoping he would slide to eight there. So that's a very good pick. I do think he's got a good chance of going a long way.
Mm-hmm. Can he win? I don't know, but I feel like he's got an idol in his pocket. Maybe he'll be around for a while. All right. AJ, you have two picks now here at number eight and number nine.
Okay, the field is narrowing down. Okay. I am going to go with, I'll complete the marriage and I'll pick Neil.
Neil.
Yeah, only because I already have Aubrey and otherwise I would have let him go to you. But I definitely want to pick Neil and I'm going to let you take that person. let you take that person. I am going to pick Joseph.
Joseph. Okay. Yes. Tell me why Joe.
Because for the last three or four drafts, the person we have left on the table has been the Keith Nail type who ends up somehow lasting and winning an immunity here and winning immunity there. We're finding some sort of points that we leave on the board. And I don't want to be the one who has to leave the Joseph points, the Keith Nail points on the board.
That's fair. It's as good of a reason as any. All right. At number 10, I'm going to go with a person who I think I'm probably higher on also than most people. You called him our narcissist. I'm going to go with Peter because I think that Peter is in a interesting spot here post swap. I think that he is somebody who could potentially defect away from the Brains tribe and somebody who could potentially be in the spot to go to a side that has numbers, whether it's joining up with Beauty, joining up with Braun. And I think that he is somebody also who could win some challenges moving forward. I think that he certainly had a bad episode three, but if you sort of take that out of the picture, I think that we've seen some positive things from Peter. So give me Peter at number 10.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely think that if the opportunity is there, he leaves and defects immediately. Absolutely. The only thing that would prevent that is if it's just like him and Debbie. I think that's the only thing that would keep him loyal. And even then, he'd probably figure out a way or think he's figured out a way to survive without her. So
AJ, so now we have three people are left. We have Michelle, we have Julia, we have Scott. I will get one, you will get one, and one will go undrafted here. One will go to the waiver wire. All right, let's go ahead and talk this through. I am going to go with, give me Julia, because I feel like that she's somebody who, while I don't know if she has winner upside, I feel about her, who's coming after Julia? When is she getting voted out? I mean, is she getting voted out? You could see the scenario where maybe, you know, some sort of swap tribe feels like, oh, well, she's not really helping us in the challenges. Sort of like how Alexis got voted out in this spot in the original. I'm sorry, actually, it was in the sixth episode that she got voted out right before the merge. But they sort of felt like, okay, she could join back up with her tribe. And you could certainly imagine that scenario if she's isolated from the rest of the beauties. But if she makes it to the merge, I mean, when are people coming for Julia?
This is true. I mean, when you have no impression at the merge, then yeah, it's like, well, we can always get her out later. It becomes almost the Abby Maria thing where although Abby Maria made an impression, even she was able to last a really long time because people want to take her to the end. It's the same thing with someone who's making no impression. It's like, well, we can always get her out, so you might as well get out the targets first.
Yeah, in my mind, she's 2 weeks away from being in the final five.
Yeah, it certainly is possible. And yeah, I'm with you. I agree that because we don't have any negative information, we don't have positive information, but we don't have negative information. So yeah, it's a smart pick here, I think.
Okay, so now the choice comes down to you. Do you want to go with your person that you said is fresh meat, or do you want to go with the person that you said is the idiot savant?
Now, we don't know how long. If they're going to be splitting up into like a 6 and a 7 here, we don't know how long it's going to be until they decide to merge. I think once we get to the merge, Scott has practically zero value because it's no longer about winning, you know, tribal challenges. It's all individual at that point, and the target becomes even bigger on Scott. So
for you, AJ, does it come down to, do you want to double down and add Scott to your fantasy team that already led off with Jason, or do you want to diversify your portfolio and bring Michelle into the fold?
Well, I would say it comes down to the fact that, much like your feelings towards Julia, I could make the exact same argument for Michelle. It's what we know right now. And I don't know that Scott's winning any challenges. I think he hasn't impressed me so much in the challenges. So as far as winning individual immunity, I don't know that he could do that. Quite frankly, he went to Kansas. I hate the Jayhawks. Go, Michelle.
Yeah, the reason why I went with Julia over Michelle there at number 11 was I just felt like that Michelle seems like that she might tell somebody off more likely than Julia would. I feel like that Michelle has a little bit more of a temper, and because that she is somebody that is, you know, a bartender from New Jersey, I feel like that she's probably, like Alicia, less likely to take lip from another person, whereas I felt like that Julia is probably going to be able to deal with more crap from people out there.
It's possible, although even though she may be able to deal with it, I mean, if all Jason sees from Julia is Alicia 2.0 and they end up together, that could instantly set something in motion that causes Julia to go first. But I, you know, it's totally plausible what you're saying as well.
All right, AJ. So let's review the draft. And ironically, our professional basketball player went undrafted here in our big draft. So maybe he can sign. Maybe he can go play in the Survivor League Europe or something like that, and eventually make his way back onto this. All right. So the draft went as follows. With the first pick, AJ took Jason. Rob then followed up with Anna and Debbie. AJ went back with Aubrey and Nick. Rob took Sydney and Ty. Neil and Joseph for AJ. Peter and Julia for Rob. And Michelle for AJ. So Team AJ is Jason, Aubrey, Nick, Neil, Joseph, Michelle. Rob is Anna, Debbie, Sydney, Ty, Peter, and Julia. And we will see ultimately how this all bears out and really who gets the first pick in the Big Brother 18 fantasy draft coming this summer.
Awesome.
Right? Unless you don't want to come back on next week and talk about the 13 archetypes of Big Brother Canada 4, right?
You know what? Unfortunately, I have not gotten into it. I just have been so swamped with other stuff, I haven't even started, so I couldn't. But I'm saddened by the fact that I can't. So,
and I know your son is a big Amazing Race fan. Is he enjoying the social media moguls?
He is. He is enjoying them. He is mocking them every time they think that a city name is a country name or vice versa, because he just laughs out loud at these idiots and their poor grasp of geography. But it was a fun episode of The Race that we just saw in the snow. And very exciting. He's yes. very much enjoying this season, as am I. As am I. Although my boys, Darius and Cameron. Yeah. No, I was all in on them until they started talking about how smart they were, and I was like, no. Don't do that on The Race. Yeah. And it wasn't too much longer before they were gone.
Well, AJ, once again, great job. Very fun spot again that I had been getting people asking me all week, are we doing this? What are the chances? And of course, you always come through for the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. So we do appreciate that. So thanks again.
Oh, it is my pleasure. You know that I'm going to do this anyway. So the fact that I'm doing it and actually talking to you and not just talking to myself, it certainly makes my family feel a lot better about my mental health.
Yeah, and I can't believe really how long that we've been doing this for. When was the first time that we did this? Was it back? Did we do this back in South Pacific? Was that the first time that we did this?
Yes, according to the RHAP wiki, I looked it up myself. That the first time we discussed this was talking about the noteworthy moves of Ozzie Luth asking his tribe to send him to Redemption Island, and John Cochran's must discuss flip. So it's been that long, yeah.
Yeah, so this is, I believe, then the 10th season we're discussing. So I think the next time we do it, it'll be the 5-year anniversary.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's awesome, but it's crazy. Well, when we get to our 13th season of doing this, we'll archetype out the 13th season. No, we will not do that.
The 13 podcasts of Survivor. And that doesn't even count all the times we did it for Big Brother, too.
Oh, my goodness. It's been fun, as always. Okay. And I always enjoy coming on, and I hope that we'll be doing this for many, 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 many seasons to come.
Well, AJ Mass is a wealth of information about a variety of subjects, whether it is fantasy baseball, science fiction movies, TV, pop culture. Follow him on Twitter. He is at AJ Mass. AJ, anything else you want to talk about? I know you're working on so many different things.
Yeah, well, you can find me on ESPN.com/fantasy. I'll be doing some almost daily columns on fantasy baseball there. You can also look us up on iTunes, The Dropship, the 100 podcast that I do with Joe Garfine, if you're a big fan of that show. And if you're a big fan of science fiction movies, as Rob pointed out, I am. I'm also doing a podcast on the weekly with Mr. Mike Bloom called The Hamster Factor, where we go over movies that Mike has never seen before, but I have, and we try and figure out what's going on in some of these complicated movies like 12 Monkeys and Blair Witch Project and Donnie Darko, things like that.
Yes, and it gives you an opportunity to feel old every single week when you know, a person in their 20s hasn't seen movies that you feel like were just out.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you know, it's like, so I saw that in the theater. He was like, I was 5. I'm like, oh, gosh, really?
Yeah. All right, check all that out. Of course, you could also, check out AJ's books, which are available on Amazon. Yes, It's Hot in Here, and also How Fantasy Sports Explains the World. And AJ, I do thank you because I have the opportunity to tell my son that I actually know Mr. Met, and he is very impressed with that.
Awesome. I'm very glad that I would make your bedtime stories with Dominic a little more
relatable.
Relatable, yes. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. We'll post the links to AJ's books on the show page on robswebsite.com. AJ, thanks again. Okay.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody. There you have it. AJ Mass back here on Rob Has a Podcast. Always appreciate when AJ comes on to give us his take on the current season. All right. That's going to do it for us here today. If you missed it earlier today, I posted The Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler talking about episode number 4. I've got one more Survivor show coming up about this past episode, and that is going to be with David Bloomberg, where we talk about why Alicia lost based on the David Bloomberg rules to Survivor. We'll also talk a little bit about what happened to Caleb and why Caleb ultimately was eliminated from the game. It's a little more than meets the eye in terms of what David comes up with there. So looking forward to that show. And of course, we love to get your comments on robiswebsite.com. And of course, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robiswebsite.com/iTunes. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.